right now we're actually getting at where the work really is, actually something that predated your mother getting sick and is now in stronger form. Qualitatively, it's the same dynamic. It's just quantitatively more intense.
Right.
Welcome to the Attached Life podcast. This series is a brand new series called In the Beginning. I'm really excited about it. It's very unique. Instead of just talking about concepts of therapy that I used to when I first started my podcast, and then instead of the next iteration where I had monologues telling you stories, stories of healing, we called it, stories of sessions that I had with clients, we're now going a step further. We're taking you inside the actual experience of a live session. I'm recording sessions with actual people, real people, couples, individuals, men and women, who are struggling or facing a variety of different life challenges. Challenges that are just life challenges, challenges that are relatable to each and every one of us in different ways. And I'm just doing therapy with them. I'm doing what I do with all my clients, trying to show up for them and trying to support and help them in whatever way that I can. And you, the listener, get to be present to that. You get a seat in the office, in the experience, and I hope that you will find it meaningful, relatable, possibly healing, transformative, and impactful on your own life, your own struggles, and bring you more meaning, purpose, and fulfillment in your life. We never really know what the beginning is. It's interesting, we just had, when I'm recording this, it's just after Pesach. And in telling the story of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, in Egypt, we know the halacha is that we're supposed to start with the hard time and tell the story from there until the Messiah B'Shvach, until they get out. And there's actually a debate in the Gemara, Machlokas, what is the beginning? Where do you start? Do you start with Avadim Hayinu, we were slaves to Paro and Mitzrayim, or do you start Mitchila Odeh Avodah Zarah Hayolosin? Do you start with our forefathers, having been idol worshippers way before Mitzrayim? Essentially, what's the beginning of the Mitzrayim story? It's kind of interesting to think, it's almost like they're arguing whether your trauma story starts in your lifetime, or do you look at intergenerational trauma? The Gemara also says that the word Bereishis is actually one of the 10 statements of creation, but it's called a Maimar Sasam, a closed act or a closed speech, which is why it doesn't say God said, it just says in the beginning. Because the beginning is really a mystery. We never really know the beginning. And I think it's a very important perspective for therapy and for understanding ourselves and for any of the sessions that I do, because we as humans like to try and make sense of things and to feel a sort of capacity for control. And even if we can't control what's happening, we can try to control it through our understanding. So we want there to be a clean, neat story. And therefore, if there's a problem or there's something that seems not right, we want to be able to point to something and say, this is the cause of that. This is how that started. This is why it is. And I think that's kind of where some of the trauma-informed therapy obsession comes from. And I'm a very trauma-informed therapist, and I really believe in that modality and that method and that philosophy. So I'm all in on that. And yet, at the same time, I think it's important not to fall into the trap of thinking that we actually really know the beginnings. Why do I struggle with this? Or why do I struggle with that? Or why is my family this way or that way? Or why is this going on in my marriage or my life or with my kid? And we look to point to a cause. But the reality is that we live in an imperfect world. We live in an unredeemed world. We live in a world of brokenness, really. Of course, on some level, it's all perfect and it's all unity and it's all meant to be, but that's not the reality that we live in. That's not the perspective, the experience that we have of the world. And so what's the beginning of a problem? Well, it's because this person did this to you or because that person is a narcissist or because that person is this way or that way. It's all very complex and it's always multiple factors. And the beginning always has a beginning prior to that. And then there's a beginning prior to that. And so as we do this kind of work, kind of holding that lightly, holding the mystery of it lightly, which doesn't mean we can't search, doesn't mean we can't take what we do know seriously, but it's holding both. And I think you'll see some of that in this particular session that I have with this particular client, where we're talking about something very current going on in his life at the moment. And that what's going on makes a lot of sense in the context of what's happening. And then later in the session, we realize that actually it didn't only start now, it started prior to the new situation that he's dealing with. And in this episode, we don't even really have a chance to go fully into where that came from and how that started. But always searching back to that beginning, and yet at the same time, knowing that the beginning is something also beyond us. I hope that you enjoy listening to the session. I thank the individual who did this with me, and hope that you'll find something meaningful and something that can help you in your life as you listen. Just a heads up about this episode. We're still working on perfecting the voice changing technology and how we record it. So there are parts of this episode where the client's voice is a little bit jumbled and doesn't really come through. After listening to it, we decided we're still going to release this episode because most of it is understandable and we felt that it was valuable and meaningful to listen to, but there are parts of it that do not come out clearly. And hopefully going forward, we'll get it done better and better. Thanks for understanding. I hope you enjoy.
Okay. Hi. Thanks for agreeing to do this and looking forward to spending this time together.
Of course. Thank you.
Okay. So first off, just checking in how you're doing before we even jump into anything, what it's like to just to be here entering this session.
So definitely nervous. I mean, there is a microphone in front of me, so a little bit different than a standard therapy session, but
right. Right. What about it makes you nervous? Is it the fact that it's going to be listened to afterwards, or the kind of the content of what you want to get into, or something else?
It's like, what if someone hears some information and figures out who it is, and then it's like some of that, and then, you know, exploring oneself is sometimes intense. So
yeah, for sure. Okay. Both make perfect sense. Is there anything that would be helpful for you right now about either of those things, or do you kind of feel like, okay, I'm feeling a little nervous, but let's just kind of jump into it. I'm okay.
Jump in.
Okay, cool. So what would you like to try and use this time for or focus on? What are you hoping to try and get out of this?
Like, what specific issue?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or situation?
Yeah.
So, I mean, a year and a half ago, around, my mother was diagnosed with cancer. Fortunately, not simple in many, many, many ways. And it's also like not, I don't know exactly what this means, stage four, but people hear that and it sounds bad. So that's where it's at right now. And obviously that has a lot of effects for her. And just like health-wise, mental, just like mentally day to day. But there's also a lot of other consequences, like depending on how my mother's doing on any particular day. That could affect how my father's feeling, and then how my younger siblings are doing. And I don't live at home, but when I do go home, it's like every day it could be, am I entering into a somber, depressed, crazy environment, or is everything like normal and chill? My mother's feeling good. You don't really ever know. It's just like the reality of cancer and the treatments and the cycles. So that's difficult. And then if it is, if my mother's not feeling well and not around, and that's an environment I'm walking into. So it just, I every single time I like brace myself, I'm like, okay, I don't know what I'm walking into, but hopefully it'll be good. And then if the environment's not good, then like I could hold off like a little bit, and then after, I don't know, 30 minutes, an hour of being there, I'm like sucked into it, and ruins my night, and then I have to like go back to where I'm staying and decompress for like 2 hours and cope. Mm-hmm. I just want to be able to be there and like present.
Yeah.
Fully dragged down by the environment. That's what I'm struggling with at the moment.
Okay. And what are you hoping to, like, if this time we spend together right now went as well as it possibly could, right? What are you hoping to walk out with?
I guess at minimum, like, to be able to notice when this is happening. And maybe some, I don't know, tools or something to do as like a emergency measure.
Yeah, thing. For sure.
And then ideally, I would like to be able to just be there and present.
Yeah.
Maybe alleviate and improve the environment in some ways.
Yeah, that's a really nice goal. I'm just curious, like, what you're bringing up is more about or more focused on the way that her situation is impacting the home environment and the impact that has on you. I'm just curious, how are you experiencing her illness and the, unfortunately difficult prognosis, just for yourself, like leaving the home environment aside for a second, just like your mother being sick and in the situation that she's in.
It was, I mean, it depends on the day. But especially in the beginning, there was just like whoever's been through this knows it's like a so there's a lot of steps to the process of testing and like maybe surgery or not and this treatment and that treatment. Like there's a lot of like steps. And in our situation, unfortunately, it was just like one bad. Each step was just worse and worse and worse as it kept progressing. It was like, okay, well, maybe this one will work. And then going through the more intense treatment. And then it just, that, well, that didn't work. So now we have to go with the more intense and like, and surgery and this and that. So I don't know, each of those steps are very difficult. Yeah, I like confronting mortality is very difficult, I guess, intense, painful. We know everyone could die, but like it becomes more real. And a lot of crying. Let's be real. A lot of crying. And it's also, there's also like a piece of it where like I think most people, like their parents are like they look up to them, and your parents still almost have this like indestructible, like they're always like they took care of everything always. And it's very difficult to see my parents in a situation where they're like they don't know what to do, and they're not in control, and like I don't know what goes on in other families, but in the last like year and a half, I've seen my father cry like multiple times, a bunch of times. It's like that's really hard for it to see. It's hard to.
What are you noticing in your body physically as we're talking about this right now?
No, I'm very tense.
Where do you feel that tension the most?
My whole upper body, my jaw.
So if you could pick one spot out of all of it right now, just for a moment, and we can get to others, but just focusing on one spot doesn't have to make any sense, but wherever it is, noticing that breath. But if you could pick one spot and just focus in on there for a moment, if that's okay.
My jaw is very.
Your jaw. Okay. So just notice your jaw. And when I say notice it, I mean simply placing your mind's attention on the sensation of tightness in your jaw without any kind of judgment or evaluation of it, and see what happens next. What do you notice?
Relax a little.
Relaxed a little bit. Okay. So notice that. Noticing a little bit of a more expanded breath. Are there any, I'm just curious, totally okay when the answer is no, by the way. Are there any thoughts that are coming up along with the noticing the jaw relaxing a little bit and the deeper breaths?
Like, am I saying the right thing?
So can we just try and establish a rule of like whatever you say is the right thing because it's what you're saying, it's what's going on in the moment? Okay. What do you notice now?
Just when I'm relaxed.
And what about in the rest of your body?
Also more relaxed.
Okay.
Some tension like on my stomach.
Okay. Yeah, so just for just one more moment, just noticing that the body relaxed. It's a pretty interesting thing, right? Like all we did was put your attention on it. It's very counterintuitive. That's why I want to just highlight it for you because you're going through, and we'll come to your stomach in a second, but just want to I want to just offer this to you because you're going through an extremely difficult challenging life experience and what most of us naturally do when that happens is we kind of either get swallowed up by emotions or we avoid emotions. When I say emotions, I really just mean kind of an inward focus on what's happening for us relative to the situation. And because we get swallowed up by them or we avoid them, they kind of just stay stuck with us. So it's very counterintuitive, but focusing in on the sensation and giving it a little bit of time and space actually, most of the time, not always, but most of the time, just on its own, naturally kind of dissolves. It's what we call pendulation. It pendulates, like the system, our nervous system pendulates. So if you imagine like an infinity loop, right, like the sideways eight, so it swings back and forth. So if you imagine one side as being like activation and distress in the body and the other side being regulation, so it flows back and forth. It's an infinity loop. It goes back and forth, right? And actually what happens is if we don't pay attention, or if we don't pay attention in a skillful way, we just get overwhelmed by it, by the side of the distress, it gets stuck on the distress side of things. When we titrate it to focus in on one feeling at a time, one sensation at a time, but we actually allow it in, then our system goes into the distress or the activation and it's able to process it through. It doesn't get clogged and it's able to release and now come out the other side and go back into the regulation and find our resources. And that doesn't mean we stay there. Then we constantly go back and forth in life. That's called being alive. Right.
That's I like that imagery.
Yeah. Yeah. So just something that's helpful for all human beings. And especially I think when we're going through a difficult time. So checking back in, what do you notice now?
I'm very, very lost, man.
Okay. I'm curious. Go ahead.
Yes, just like before I was speaking, like Ben told me to pay attention. So I realized like speaking very loud and like fast and intense. Mm-hmm. And, like,
yeah. Which makes sense. I mean, there's a lot there.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to ask you, like, what, you know, I don't know if this is something you've thought about, but it's like, as we live and we experience things, and especially kind of like as families, when we experience things, there's kind of like stories that we write consciously or unconsciously, right? Explicitly or implicitly, there's kind of stories that we give to the experiences we're having. I'm curious how you as an individual, and also maybe in the context of your family, like what's the story that's being written in this very difficult situation and in this experience? And now that you've kind of, you know, named it like stage four. I mean, you didn't name it that, but you told me that it's been named that. And so kind of thinking about it, tell me if this is okay. Like, is it an okay term to use, like an end of life experience?
I hope not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's definitely, the medical terms like they're very broad. So
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't call it that. This will like, no, but there this will be like a lifelong thing that my family has to deal with and my mother has to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
But Rishon, like, she'll live for many, many years.
But this is something livable?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what they said. Okay. I didn't realize that. Okay. So tell me more. What does that mean?
From what I understand, it means like again, there's chemo, there's treatment, there's all those that thing, those and those processes, and then hopefully at a certain point, the cancer is not that like has been fully killed off or mostly not there. And then there's a few years of like monitoring and maybe low, you know, a lower level of treatment. You know, the issue is a lot of times it comes back. So there just always has to be constant monitoring. And if it does come back, then there's more mm-hmm. treatment.
So what does the stage four part mean?
I think it means that it didn't stay in one place and it spread all over the body and like it's growing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Got it. But they're still approaching this from a perspective of like, we're gonna treat this and get rid of it.
Yeah. I mean, on a good day.
Yeah. Got it.
Like you're saying, like the story changes depending on people's moods and the latest doctor's, you know, doctor visit and test results. Like,
okay, got yeah. it. Got it. So the direction I was actually heading in about the story, I actually want to change that because I was going that direction based on a misunderstanding of what yeah. was happening, of where we were at with this. Yeah. Is that okay?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So just slowing, just pausing here and kind of noticing for a minute again before we pivot in a different direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what do you notice in your body now?
A little nervous for what's next.
For what?
For the next question. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, it can't be as bad as the last question.
Yeah, it's true. So go for it.
No, so I mean, actually, it's really not. Meaning, now that I understand that better, I would actually want to loop way back around, and not go in the direction that I was just heading. I'd want to go back to where you started, which is your home and what's going on there and the environment around it. You know, when you walk in, and the different, you know, the swings up and down. Yeah, how does that feel?
I think that's the. Yeah, I think that's the core. But yeah, where I'm struggling. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So, can I name something for myself just to get it out so that I can be more present with you?
Please.
Yeah. So I'm feeling A, embarrassed, and B, badly that I like totally like miss like just my own just the ignorance of like misunderstanding what you were describing to me about the situation.
Got it. Yeah. I mean, it's totally understandable. Yeah. When my father told me, oh, it's like stage four, I'm like, that's where my head went. I'm like, sounds bad. Mm-hmm. It's like a stage four hurricane, you know? So, so yeah, I got it.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So give me a little bit of the landscape at home. Like, is there, so you're the oldest?
I'm the oldest.
Okay. And I mean, we're not going to go into too much, I don't want you to, you know, go into too much detail in a way that you'll be concerned about identifying information, but so the oldest, that's a pretty significant role to play then. Right.
Yeah, definitely a sense of responsibility. So.
Yeah.
You know, take care of people and the environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there anyone in the home that is more on like the able to kind of inject positivity type of personality?
I think I guess I'm the best at it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
At times other people can, but even just forgetting the rest of this, you know, what's going on, just people's personalities are different. I think I just have more naturally the personality to be able to do it. And I'm the oldest, so I'm just better able to sometimes just be okay and add.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So when you walk, so when you walk in the house and it's not a good day, so what do you notice right now if you're imagining that or if you think about that? What do you notice in your body?
A lot of times I want to run away.
Mm-hmm.
Just avoid.
Yeah. So if we slow it down, you want to run away because there's something that you're feeling that's not pleasant to feel. So you want to run away. So the wanting to run away is actually kind of like the second feeling.
Right.
Right. What happens first? What do you experience when you walk in and people are in a gloomier mood?
So I begin to feel gloomy. If I'm seeing my mother or father like down, so then immediately the thoughts are like, okay, what happened? What's the next test result? So there's some fear, and so I guess I kind of mirror their moods. And,
Yeah. So how do you notice that initial feeling of down? Like, what's the physical sensation of it? Like, if you were talking to a medical doctor, right? Like, what's the sensation in your body physically?
I think I get like smaller, like defensive. Like, I guess either I need to like protect myself from it or carry it or both.
So normally, and it makes perfect sense, you want to run away from that, right? That's what you were saying before. Of course, right? Would it be okay right now to actually sit in it for a moment? Like we did before with the feeling in your jaw?
We could try.
Okay. So if you kind of pick one sensation, one part of your body where you're feeling that sense of kind of down or smaller, where do you go?
It's like my shoulders kind of collapse.
Okay. So can you actually let yourself do that? Like that little, like allow the shoulders to collapse a little bit, even if, and maybe it means your head falling forward just a little bit, and stay there until you feel, if you feel any impulse to come up or shift, you can. But as long as your body wants to be like that, just stay in it. What are you noticing?
I feel like tears building up.
Mm.
I also just feel very weak.
Okay. If the tears could speak, what would they say? First thing that comes to mind.
My mother's just going to die.
Okay.
And no one can do anything about it.
Okay. And what do you notice now?
Some anger.
Yeah. Where do you feel the anger in your body?
It's like the back of the jaw.
Okay.
My arms.
Okay.
Maybe I could punch something.
Yeah. Yeah. So can you allow your body to shift now into what kind of the posture of anger? Because we were more in this posture of like sunken, right? Of like the gloom. And now anger came up. So if you allow your body to be in the anger in your arms and in your jaw, it's a different positioning, right?
Yeah,
I noticed that shift, right? Like your shoulders move it, rolling backwards more, and your chest kind of coming up. And standing more, sitting more straight.
My hands are clenched, my jaw's clenched.
Yeah, okay. So stay with that for a minute. Does the anger have an address? It doesn't have to make any sense. Does the anger have an address? Who is it? Who's the anger at? God, okay.
Reality.
Yeah. What is the anger in your hands, in your jaw, your clenched fists? What does the anger want to say to God? Just on a gut level, without worrying about any kind of issues of, you know, other how we normally talk to God.
I feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like we get the point. Like, whatever or the lesson was supposed to be learned. Like it's been enough.
Yeah. And what do you notice now in your body? Yeah, I noticed that much deeper breath.
It was good to see that.
Okay. Is the anger still active? It's okay if it is. Or does it feel like it not there right now? I'm asking because if it is still present, I wanna give it some more space and an expression if it wants.
And the upkeep part has been released.
Okay.
The anger that's coming from like enough's enough is still
yeah. There. Yeah. Yeah. What about physically? What do you notice now?
Back to just more collapsed thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to do. And I guess the anger kind of shifted from like into just like it's been a long, long journey. I'm just done.
Yeah.
My whole family's done.
Yeah. How have you been making it through this very, very long journey? How have you been, you know, kind of holding yourself up into whatever degree you have, and what resources have there been for you, or how do you manage?
Me personally, a lot of music. A lot of music. Playing music, writing music, listening to music. I go to therapy on a regular basis. I'm not saying I few to God. I try to connect in that way, meaning in a more positive way.
What does that mean for you?
Sometimes it means I enjoy learning, so sometimes it means that. I try to do as well as when I remember, and yeah. And music's also very, I think it's part of my evolution, so.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And friends.
Mm-hmm. How have friends been there for you or been helpful for you?
Sometimes literally has shoulders to cry on. Sometimes just speaking things out too. And just connection and support.
Mm-hmm. So when you think of those different things, music, Hashem, sometimes, friends, what are you noticing right now?
I feel stronger, more grounded.
And where do you notice that in your body?
I feel like a smile.
Mm-hmm.
Faint smile.
Yeah.
A faint smile.
Mm-hmm.
It was like my core is a little stronger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So notice that again, if you can, that pendulation of the infinity symbol, right? Because I think, you know, kind of coming back to that, I think it's very important to kind of to really make space for the reality in which there's going to be sadness, there's going to be anger. The situation you're in is one that prompts that warrants that. The goal is not to get rid of that. The goal is to have the capacity to go into that and then notice the resources that you have, notice the support you have, and to know that it's able to shift back to the other side at some point, and to allow that system to kind of to flow. So I'm curious maybe if there's something we can do to try and help that just a little bit, and especially that situation you described of kind of like walking into the house on a day that, you know, is not a great day, to say the least. So I like to think about it as like everybody has, so to speak, almost like an energy bubble around them, like a personal space bubble, right? And it's like it kind of wraps around us head to toe, front to back. Maybe it's the size of like a couple of feet or like a foot, 2 feet, 3 feet, like from us, around us, like type of thing. And that bubble is kind of see-through to allow the passing of information of me to you and you to me, and that we can mirror each other. We can feel from each other. We can express to each other both explicitly, implicitly, all of that kind of thing, right? And there's a flow. It's a connection. That's how relationships happen. That's how interactions happen. Sometimes some people, it's not our topic right now to talk about, but people can kind of like create like brick walls instead of the see-through bubble. So they're cut off from the trade, from the sharing of connection. Then there are people who can have like completely breached bubbles, that they become almost overly plugged into everything that everyone around them is feeling, which means that they give off a lot of self to others. They hand themselves over and they receive almost a hyper level of feeling what everybody else is feeling around them, right? Being affected by them. So I just am wondering if, you know, being the oldest in your family, and I don't know enough about your personality in general and history in general to know how your bubble, so to speak, has been developed or affected, thickened or thinned. But in this situation, it sounds like walking into your house, a lot of the heaviness passes very strongly into your inner circle from the people around you.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just curious, checking in. Is that something you think is true about you in general with other people, or is it kind of something that's, you know, uniquely developed in the context of this situation that you're in at home?
I think for sure with my family, there's a thinner bubble, for sure.
Like how long ago approximately did this start?
It's like a year and a half.
Okay. And before that, with your family, would you say that you also were kind of like the one to kind of carry a sense of responsibility for others in the family?
I think I just didn't have as mature of a perspective back then, but I definitely was affected by what, like, I was very affected by whatever was going on back then. I was thought it was just a bad day in the house, so that would very much affect me. Yeah, I think now I'm older, I have more perspective.
Was that something like even prior to this illness? Like that was something that was like a thing, you know, a bad day in the house.
It definitely happened.
Mm-hmm. What did that mean in prior contexts?
Just people lazing around, not much of a schedule, like a classic Sunday, late afternoon. one or more people got angry at one other person, and then just created a slightly more toxic environment, and that affects everyone, and then. Yeah.
Were you typically one of the people involved in the getting angry or being angered at, or were you kind of like playing the role? Like what was your role in that context?
All roles.
All roles. Okay.
All roles. Sometimes contributing, and then a lot of times like running away and either going to my room or driving away or.
Mm-hmm.
Using my phone.
So would you describe it as being like a kind of highly emotional or highly charged environment in general? Or maybe I would put it as like almost like somewhat dysregulated, in the sense of like either there's like kind of more of this depressive feel, or there's, you know, anger, or, you know, etc.
I mean, usually pretty normal stable. And then, yeah, and then I don't know how many times a month, but let's say three. You know, there'd be like 3 days like this, like just just nothing's going and no one's doing anything. And it's just not good energy.
And when that would happen, like, was there was no one that was kind of anchoring the whole thing of, like, you know, kind of resetting or taking direction, you know, taking control to kind of create direction for it, or to kind of, you know, let's say parent the family, so to speak.
So if my father was around or up to it, then that would be his role. And he is able to do that many times. But sometimes not, and now in the current situation,
right?
Like it, even less so. Just a lot more stress, a bit more busy. Like I said, I would say in general, my family is more emotive and expressive when things are intense.
What do you mean when you say if my father was up to it?
And sometimes he would also be like in the mood or in the environment. And
Got it. And your mother the same?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting because it doesn't sound like you're describing it as happening, you know, so often, you know, in any, like, you know, really like overly consistent way. But it does sound like, at least if I'm getting it right, you know, from what you're describing, it does sound like it, when it happened and there was some consistency to it, you know, three times a month is, you know, I don't know, almost once a week type of thing, you know?
We could say once a week.
We could say once a week. Okay, right. So it's like, it's once a week, right? That's not infrequent. To have a day or a stretch of time where it was like unanchored, you know, and meaning every family has that there's, you know, situations where, you know, times where, you know, people are dysregulated or people get angry at each other or people, you know, are in lower moods or whatever it is, but kind of that it was almost like there's no one running this ship. Right. And there's a lot of people who are floundering.
Yeah. That's a good way to say it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that kind of situation is often the type of situation that actually leads to the bubble I was describing before to be either hardened or breached. And it makes a lot of sense, right? Because what happens when there's a lot of activation going on around us? There's a lot of dysregulation around us, and there isn't really someone, you know, addressing it or anchoring it, or even like kind of trying to take control of it. So either we have to kind of block ourselves off from it by making the bubble thicker so that we don't feel it, or we develop almost a sense of responsibility for it, which is like the breached bubble. Like we're trying to plug into it, to attune to it, so that maybe we can be the anchor for it. We can figure it out. We can hold it for the system.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Like I said before, either run away or try the responsibility.
Right.
I personally have found that taking responsibility could be, I'm not doing it in the right way, but I can't. It's like people are in their moods and.
Right.
It doesn't usually work.
Yeah. So just being that we don't have a ton of time left, and I think that kind of, you know, as we've woven in and out of different things through the session, I think that right now we're actually kind of getting at like where the work really is kind of in actually something that predated your mother getting sick, and is now in stronger form because the situation is heightened. But it's actually it's qualitatively, it's the same dynamic. It's just quantitatively like more intense.
Right. Yeah.
Does that feel true to you? Does that resonate?
I think in terms of like my experience, yeah. Yeah. External circumstances are very different.
But yeah.
In terms of like my struggle in this area, yeah. It's the same. The same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think there's some deeper work there that can be explored. But one thing I would just offer you in the last few minutes we have, if that's okay, is that what we want to try and do when there's that, you know, almost like breached bubble, so to speak, is we want to try and patch it up. And one of the ways that can be helpful to do this is not what works for everyone, but one thing that I've found to be helpful for a lot of people is to try and recenter in myself, in my body, in my bubble, by utilizing a visualization of something that anchors me in a feeling of my own rhythm, my own regulation. Because what's happening when I walk into that environment and people are gloomy or in a bad mood around me is now I've essentially left my own feelings and I've plugged into theirs. So what we want to do when we walk into that situation is we want to take the plug and pull it out of their outlet and plug it back into ourselves. And we want to reestablish this sphere around us. Not that we're closed off from them, but that I'm engaging with them from a place of being in myself. And now I'm me and I'm engaging with you. There's me and there's you. As opposed to me dissolving into you. So something that's for a lot of people very helpful is if there is a visual, an image of something that you find that for whatever reason in your nervous system, it kind of just puts you into your own rhythm, your own regulation, your own sense of calm. So just for example, someone, it would be just thinking of a body of water. And for somebody else, it's a grassy meadow. For someone else, it's a forest with tall trees and the sun kind of getting in through the spaces between the trees, etc. Something that brings you back into yourself. Anything come to mind for you?
Like mountains.
Mm. Okay.
On a mountaintop somewhere.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about it. Is it like a snowy, snow-capped kind of mountain? Is it green and full of trees? Is it rocky?
So it's green.
Okay.
It's green. I climbed a mountain in Israel once. It's gorgeous.
Okay, and so as I notice you're closing your eyes, as you're closing your eyes and thinking about that, what do you notice in your body?
It's like free spirited energy. It's
yeah.
Fresh air.
Fresh air. Okay. Yeah. Can you breathe in some of that fresh air? And what are you noticing now?
Just want to stay for a while.
Okay. So stay there.
Or actually be there.
What do you say? Or actually be there?
When? Yeah.
Can you track it through your body a little bit more? And so notice like the different sensations kind of from head to toe, trying to let it register even more. It's like to use a yeshiva terminology, be like we're trying to make it bichal more, to create more of a chalos.
Like I feel myself slouching. It's like I feel like I need to like sit up.
Okay.
Like stretch.
Yeah.
It's for like a excited energy.
So with that visual, can you imagine walking into your home before you know what it's going to be like? Even let's not assume anything. You're walking into your house. Yeah, just notice the yawn also, by the way. That's good. The reason I say it's good is because It could just be tiredness, you know, which is totally fine on a regular level. But it also could be because yawns are often a sign when we're doing this kind of work of a release, like a discharge. So just noticing that. Okay, so with this visual, so you imagine you're walking into your home, and just even as you're approaching the door, before you even see anything, you're just approaching the door. Maybe your hand is reaching towards the doorknob. What do you notice in your body?
Apprehension that I'm going to be torn from space.
Okay. So would it be possible to acknowledge that, of course, the surroundings you're in will affect you, because so long as you're still plugged into reality and you haven't, you know, gone to the brick wall resort, our surroundings do affect us, and that's a good thing because that's how we have relationships and connection, and that's how we're social. So it's going to affect you, but you have the capacity to still stay in your own skin, even as you interact with someone else.
It feels possible
Okay.
sometimes.
Sometimes. Okay.
Yeah.
So when you notice that it feels possible, how do you notice, how do you experience that in your body?
It feels empowering, like I have strength.
Empowering, strength. Okay. Where do you feel that?
I
Where do you
feel
feel
like
that?
I just feel like my whole upper body like expand, like just renewed energy.
Great. So if you go into the house now and you look around, you're looking around from the perspective of I'm in me and I have my own feelings, my own thoughts, my own body. And I, with myself, am interacting with those around me. What are you noticing? I see a bit of a nod.
Yeah, I feel like I can just have that feeling of they're experiencing what they're experiencing. I'm experiencing. And I could be there for them or not if they don't want me around. And not I would not take on their state or their anger or be insulted or
Yeah.
just be like, okay, like, I'm okay.
Yeah. Can you say that again and notice what it's like as you're saying it?
Yeah, I could see whoever my family is there. And if they're not in a good mood or angry or depressed or anxious about Pesach cleaning or something. I could either be there for them and help them, or if they're not looking for that and they just need space, so I could just give them more space and not be insulted or take on their mood.
Yeah, what do you notice in your body now?
Just like calm. Like I'm good.
Yeah, calm. I'm good. You know the Kutzker's line? I never thought about it in this context, but you know that lot, like the line of, "If I am I, because you are you, and you are you because I am I, then I'm not I, and you are not you."
Yeah, I've
But if
heard
I am
that.
I because I am I and you are you because you are you, then I am I and you are you, right? I never thought about it in this way until right now, but it's kind of this kind of gives a different angle to what that means.
Well, usually I think about that in terms of like pressure and
Yeah, exactly. That's the typical, right. That's always how I've always thought about it like that. And it's really powerful to think about it in this context. Thank you for that. You surfaced that for me.
thank you.
Yeah. So I think there, you know, there could be some more, you know, we didn't really go into allowing the feelings in when you you know, think of the earlier years of that happening in your family. And I would love to actually do what's called a corrective experience around that, which is imagining having had what you needed in that situation, which probably would have been a parent figure that was able to anchor and take control of and guide the ship. And those, I think, would be very powerful things for you to do to allow the feelings in around those memories, as well as to do the corrective experience on it. That would be kind of like the deeper layer to what we just did. But I think what we just did also can be a very helpful piece. So I'm just mentioning that just to point you in future direction for somewhere that you might explore if you want. But I think, yeah, I mean, like we said, I think that what you're experiencing right now is kind of a really heightened, you know, really heightened version of something that existed before. And so kind of focusing it in on that way might be very helpful.
Thank you. That was helpful.
Okay. How are you feeling right now?
Great.
Okay, cool.
Good.
Okay. Thank you for doing this with me. Anything before we sign off, anything else you want to just mention or share of what you're sitting with right now? It's okay if not.
Like this exercise of imagining that space, I think that's more helpful to do like before, like let's say I walk in the house or during or both or
probably all of the above, but the most ahead of it that you can get, the better, I think, typically, meaning the more you can do it in advance and you're not fighting an uphill battle afterwards to climb back into the mountains, but you're starting out in the mountains, so to speak, probably the easier it will be.
That makes sense.
And you might add a mantra to the mountains, you know, I am I and you are you, the Kutzker, right? And you don't need the whole tongue twister line, but just that, right? Like, I am I. That's it. I am I.
Yeah. People might think I'm a little bit crazy, but...
just in your head, even.
Yeah.
Yeah. People thought the Kutzker was crazy, too. Don't worry.
A little craziness. It's good.
Yeah. It's good. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much. This was very helpful.
I'm so glad. Really appreciate it.
Welcome to the postscript from this session. Share a few reflections with you. First off, it was really nice that a couple days after we did this session, I got a message from this individual with a screenshot of a phone, like a background or whatever it is, that had the words, I am I. That differentiation and that mantra, based on the Kutzker and based on the work that we did in this session that you heard, which I think is such an important piece and something that's often not necessarily focused on or addressed in some of the work that we do. Definitely for me, one of the most interesting parts of this session was where I made that kind of embarrassing mistake where I felt really bad. And to tell you the truth, most of the time when I'm in these sessions, despite the fact that we're recording it for this podcast, I really am genuinely present with the individual and not really thinking about the podcast. I'm really in the session as a regular therapy session. But for sure, I'll admit that in that moment, I was thinking, wait, shoot, is this going to be too embarrassing for me to put on the podcast? And will we edit it out? Will we not? Should I scratch this session being used? And then I thought to myself, you know, I don't think so. I think we should really actually specifically keep this in, because it just is the reality of the imperfections of a therapy session and of all people and making mistakes and repairing and being embarrassed and apologizing and then moving on and, you know, rerouting. And I had something in mind and needed to shift it. And I think that's really kind of the way it should be. And one of the things that was also interesting for me in that moment when I was, you know, kind of in it, I was thinking about it. And then especially afterwards, I was thinking even more about it, is that, you know, I wanted to apologize to him for that mistake. And at the same time, I didn't want my apology and my embarrassment to make it become about me. You know, I think it's something that can happen very easily to well-meaning people. And I think it can happen to any of us where we feel so badly about something we did to someone that now it turns into them needing to kind of take care of us for how badly we feel. But that's kind of defeats the whole purpose, because I did something, let's say, that hurt you.
So now I want to apologize to you, but if I'm feeling so much shame or so much guilt or so much embarrassment, that now I'm actually making it that you have to focus on how badly I feel. So now what it turns into is, first of all, I hurt you, and now I'm asking you to take care of me for having hurt you. Well, that's not fair, and that's not how it should be. So in this case, it wasn't necessarily that I hurt him, but it was I said something that was just innocently, mistakenly, kind of bringing up something that wasn't pleasant, or a perspective that was, obviously would be very painful for him. And I felt badly that I did that. But then while on the one hand wanting to, number one, apologize, number two, I wanted to name my embarrassment because it would help me move on and refocus and be present to him again. But at the same time, needing to balance that with not wanting it to be now he needs to make me feel better and make sure I'm okay, because that would be the opposite of what this time is supposed to be about. And that wouldn't really make sense or be fair to him. And so there's kind of this, balance of holding all of that at once. And I think it's something that's an important thing to think about when we think about situations that we're in where we're trying to apologize or own a mistake or make amends to someone for something, to make sure that we hold that balance of it not becoming really about us, which undermines the whole attempt we're trying to make. The other reflection that I'll share is that I think it's interesting when I was looking back or thinking back to the session, I actually had a bit of a sense from the beginning that something about what he was describing in his home felt to me like it was predating the situation of his mother's current illness, and that really was something more in the family system, which is what we ended up discovering later on in the session. And for whatever reason, and I have to think about this more for myself, I didn't trust that intuition that I had from the beginning, and I tried focusing more in the moment of what was going on for him in the current situation. I think the reason is because sometimes there's a bit of a self-consciousness I can have around not wanting to, quote-unquote, always bring it back to something from earlier childhood, which is an important thing to stay mindful of, but at the same time, what I preach to others and need to remind myself is to trust our intuition, to stay curious about it, not to assume that it's always correct, but to feel a sense of confidence to go after it and not allow self-consciousness around insecurities to get in the way of that. Because what happened from the fact that I didn't trust it from the outset was that we only got to that part of the story where really this situation in his home really goes way back to childhood. We didn't get to that until much later in the session, which meant that we didn't have nearly as much time as we could have to really delve into that, which is okay because the system will always bring us back around to what we need, and there's more time, and we can do another session or whatever it is. So it's not a problem per se, but it was just an interesting reflection for me in that sense. If we had kind of gotten to it earlier, it would have allowed us more time. At the same time, you also never know, because if we had jumped to it right away, maybe there would have been something else that would have come up and gotten in the way. So everything really kind of unfolds as it's supposed to unfold, and we can't try to control that too perfectly. We need to allow it to play itself out. But these are just some reflections that I've had in thinking about this session with this individual. I wish you could see him, in the session. Obviously, that's not what we're doing here, but such a sweet and pure and gentle soul that I was looking at, and really just davening for him and his family that everyone should be well, and thanking him a lot for his vulnerability and his time in doing this session with me and for all of us, and hope that everybody here was able to benefit from listening to it, and we can all grow together. Thanks so much for listening and participating in this podcast, and please share this and these sessions, these recordings, with anyone that you think might benefit, and subscribe to us and join our WhatsApp status or group or any of the other ways of following us. Thanks so much.